Clarita here, and I've got a new sponsor, DistroKid. If you want to release your music into the world, DistroKid's the easiest way to get your music into all the major streaming platforms. Unlimited uploads and keep 100% of your royalties. And because you're a Design Freaks listener, you get 30% off. Go to distrokid.com/VIP/designfreaks. DistroKid. Welcome to episode 80 of the Design Freaks podcast. My name's Clarita. I'm your host. I have a great show for you today. I am featuring Andrew from SFI Records, Soma Free Institute, Broken Press Design and Printing, all the things. We talk about it all. I want to make this a really short intro. I'm going to get right to this interview because it's awesome and we have a great time. And Andrew also gives a health update, takes us all on that whole journey. So super grateful I got to speak with him. But first, before we get into that, I just want to say thank you for tuning in. This is a very visual episode. If you can, go on over to the YouTube, Design Freaks on YouTube. Find me and subscribe, like. There's a lot of visuals, including videos by Aubrey Nering, friend of the show. So also I'm wearing a shirt. Get their merch. This one is designed by Samantha Wendell, my guest from episode 21, the Death Scum episode. There's a lot of connections. SFI is like a constellation of really bright stars. A lot of great talent involved. And we talk all about it. If you enjoy the show, please share with other vinyl and design freaks. Yeah, you can find everything at underscore Design Freaks Podcast on Instagram. There's a link tree contact form at my website, designfreakspodcast.com. For other music-related podcasts, check out ruinousmedia.com. And let's get right to it. Here is my chat with Andrew from SFI Recordings. Enjoy. Andrew, thanks for joining me.
Oh, for sure. Thanks for inviting me. I really appreciate it.
I have been such a huge fan of your work, both the music from your label and all the artwork. Tell us who you are and what you do.
Sure. My name's Andrew Crawshaw, and I guess primarily I run Broken Press, which is a screen printing shop, with my wife, Danielle. And then I also, 3 years ago now, decided I would start a record label, which was, you know, maybe not the best idea. But it's kind of a marriage of all things that are of interest to me. So, I mean, the label's primarily a lot of electronic and synth stuff, but it's also kind of some psych and, you know, things in that realm. Like, I think every release kind of sounds different, but part of the unifying thing with the whole label is that I screen print everything for all of the packaging, which kind of ties in with my print shop and, yeah, that's, I guess, largely. And then I put out some of my own records and a bunch of other people's stuff. Yes.
Well, I think starting a label was a great idea from my point of view because I've enjoyed it.
Well, thank you.
And you started this with two other people, correct?
Kind of, yeah. So the impetus for the label was that I had a bunch of projects that I all had records that had all been kind of sitting around or in stages being finished for about, well, God, 2 or 3 years each. And somewhere right before the pandemic, I thought, oh, well, I run a printing shop. My bandmate has had a metal label for years, so he knows labels and running that. And then my other bandmate, who are both in Soma Free Institute with me, he also is a designer and has been in bands forever and knows a lot of that. So I thought, oh, we can just combine our forces and kind of do that together. And then it's kind of just turned into me, but they helped me out with stuff. So the first couple things were like just projects that I was involved with, which was, Old Dark House, which myself and Corey Brewer.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's been in like Triumphal Lethargy and a ton of other projects. And then Summer Free Institute, which is with Tim Call and Justin Klein, who kind of do the label with me a little bit. And then what was the other? Oh, New Frontiers, which is mine and Justin's like new age synth project.
Generously sent me some of these things, and just I love the music is incredible, but even if it wasn't good, the packaging is so awesome, and I just love the aesthetic of your label and the fact that I've seen in interviews you recognize the concept that music is one part of a larger, and I'm paraphrasing, art project where both things are equals, which I feel really strongly with all of your releases. So well done.
Oh, thanks. Yeah. I mean, to me, that's like, I don't know. I'm a lifelong record collector. I worked in record stores when I was young, and mm-hmm. I have, you know, thousands and thousands of records. And like, to me, part of it is just like, there's so many, especially now, like there are just constantly new releases and constant like things to be, you know, no one can know about everything that's going on. And I think it's super important that if you're going to put out a record, like put the time and you put all this time and energy into making the music and making that sound good, make the packaging look cool and make it as like nice as possible. And to me, I'm like, I don't know, those times when you're in a record store and you've like, you're just flipping through bins and you just see a cool cover and you have no idea what it is and you're just drawn in because of the cover. I've bought so many records from that I had no idea what they were. And, you know, sometimes it didn't pay off, but sometimes it was like a really cool find. Be like, oh, wow, I have no idea what this is. I'll check it out. The coolest part to me is like when the packaging looks like what the music sounds like, if that makes sense, which I absolutely. Like, I know that seems like, oh, yeah, sure. But like, it's a lot harder than like, there are so many records out there that, like, you know, you get it and you're like, oh, this looks, and then you listen to it and you're like, wait, what? This is not what that, like, and to me, it just seems so important to, like, find the marriage between those two things.
Yeah, I agree. And it can even be difficult when you have full control. Imagine also having the band's input as a, you know, client and needing to please them. If you don't have control of, like, running a label, or even if you do and you need the band's input, finding that balance between having it look the way it sounds and pleasing your client, it's like maddening.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, and honestly, this whole thing has been like a really a good lesson for me. Because I do try to, I don't know. It's weird. There's not money in any of this. So yeah. I'm not paying artists a whole bunch. They're not, you know, I'm not making a bunch. So we're all just kind of doing this because we love doing it. And I'm trying to represent someone else's art when it's not my own project. And but because it is all screen printed, it kind of does build this container that everything has to be done in. And so I end up art directing kind of everything. And I've had stuff where, you know, the artist wanted something and they wanted it to look away and it wasn't necessarily my aesthetic or what I wanted, but you know, it's finding that balance and like making sure that like I think it represents them but also represents the label a little bit. It is a dance. Being thrust in the position of inadvertent art director has been like fun and kind of stressful because I'm like, you know, it's never anything that I had done before.
I mean, you've been forged in fire.
Yeah, and yeah.
That a lot of times, that's how musicians who maybe, you know, were into art, fine art or whatever, but you become a designer real fast when you need something printed or you need to promote your art music. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, you know, it's interesting too, because it's like, so I've had the screen printing shop and doing that full time as my only job for, well, good part over a decade now. But I've kind of been doing it since I was a teenager. And so I've had some involvement with R, and I designed some stuff myself. But it's been very interesting to now play the middleman of, like, between designers and finding someone who I think would match up with the music or that artist, and then someone that the artist likes, the musician, to find a visual artist that they also like, put those things together, and then end up with a final product that three different parties are happy with. And it's been an interesting process.
You said you probably use the same, I've noticed from the credits that you've used kind of the same designers. Are those people picked specifically because of the color separation that needs to happen, the screen printing process? How do you approach that?
You know, it kind of started out that way, but it quickly kind of devolved into me doing most of the pre-press and color separations on a lot of stuff, and more so just like, as long as they can do something that's relatively within the scope of what is screen printable, like I can make it, you know, do the final steps of the color separations. I would love to not do as much of that. But also I've noticed it keeps art. There's a couple artists that I've approached, and when, as soon as I say that it's for screen printing, they kind of freeze and are like, oh, I don't know. And like, it creates this weird block, and I'm like, no, more things are printable than you think they are. And I think that a lot of people just have a very limited idea of what screen printing is or what it can do. And so that is part of the thing, is I was leaning heavily on that when I started, but now I'm just like, just design something that you like, that everyone's happy with, and I will figure out a way to make this happen. It has made a few releases, so it's like I have record covers that are almost 10 colors, and you know, it's kind of overkill and absurd, but I got it to the end where it looked like what the artist gave me, so it's fine.
That's amazing.
But yeah,
wow.
I guess that's the long-winded way of saying I tried to start out like that, but now it's a sort of a give me something, let's make it happen. You know, which also, in some ways, like, it is time-consuming for me, but it also helps me practice something that I don't do. You know, I do this for my print shop, and a lot of times I'm just cleaning up files. I don't do actual full color separations for just show posters, but it's, like, a good practice for me. It's just, it's all very time-consuming is the thing.
God, you need an intern at least. did your shop have a Rizzo machine? And this is something I'm wondering, can a LP cover fit into one?
You know, no, we don't. Okay. I wish I did. Even last week was like bemoaning to my wife. I was like, God damn it, we never bought it. I really wish we had a Rizograph.
Yeah.
And I don't think, I think the biggest those go is 11 by 17. I think it's basically like photocopier size and structure.
Tabloid.
You just change out the... Yeah, and I think you just change out the color drums or whatever.
It still looks cool. It's almost the same thing, but yeah, there's something about it that's like weird and in a different way.
Yeah, but. Yeah. I mean, I would love to get one, if only just to even like do inserts or the tape covers that I do. Because like, you know, I release tapes and I screen print O cards and J cards for tapes, which is absurd. Like, no one needs to be doing that. And it's, you know, it would be awesome if I had a Rizograph. I could just, it would make it a lot easier and quicker. And I like the fucked up nature of Rizograph, that like, they all kind of look a little wrong. They never register correctly.
It feels special. It feels more like a, you know, like it's a separate piece, or it's like a unique piece. But you're right about the insert, or like a little zine that you could put in there or something.
Yeah.
Like, that would be fun. Well, if anyone who's listening or watching has one to donate, send it to Andrew. I don't know if you have room for it. I'm sorry, Danielle.
I'll happily take it.
Okay. That would be really cool. So let's go back in time a little bit. Not a little bit. Let's go all the way back in time into your artistic beginnings. I know sometimes music and art kind of are sort of inspired simultaneously when we're like in school, just figuring out what we want to do. How did your passions come about? Was it music first for you?
Yeah, it definitely was. I don't know. My parents were, they liked music. There was always music around and stuff, but neither of them played any instruments or anything like that. But yeah, I mean, definitely, I remember like mail ordering punk records when I was like 12, you know, you put the cash in an envelope and hope that in like 2 months a record shows up, and like getting the old insert, catalogs that would come for stuff. And everything. I mean, I remembered that when I was like 11, 12, 13, whatever. And I kind of grew up really into like punk and hardcore and around a lot of that. I'm from like north of Boston. Okay. And so there was a pretty big like punk hardcore scene in the late 90s and or 90s.
What are some bands that we might know from, like, this is like New England punk scene?
Yeah, I mean, God, I would be embarrassed to even mention the stuff that I was like, so I had my first band when I was maybe 15, and then my first real band that like put out records and stuff was like a crust street punk band that I was one of two singers in, which was unnecessary. Yeah, it was called Chud.
Oh, I love that.
But
Chowderheads, yeah, Under Downtown.
Oh yeah, the named after the 80s horror movie.
I know that's not the real acronym, folks, but
yeah, the actually, oddly enough or interestingly enough, that the guy that wrote that movie had an art space and like show venue in Gloucester, Mass. And we used to play there all the time. And then the hand stamp for the door was Chud. And he wrote like a sequel to that movie that he wrote us into. But he never got it made. And I was like, man, that would have been the coolest thing ever.
Oh, man. That's amazing.
But, yeah. So I grew up kind of in like that stuff. And, you know, a big part of like punk rock music is the visuals and making stuff and DIY, do it yourself. And I think I kind of came into art from that, as a backdoor, I guess, because having that band, we needed t-shirts, and I was like, why would we pay someone? That's stupid. I'll learn how to do this myself and I'll print shirts. So I learned how to print like screen print when I was like 15 from some other kid. And then I guess sort of, yeah, any appreciation of art, which sounds kind of sad, came through that, like, mm-hmm. as a secondary thing, so.
Yeah, so did you ever take any art classes after that?
I went to a community college and got a, you know, associate's in graphic design, but was only, like, 2 years of community college graphic design, so I actually was going through some boxes the other day and found my portfolio from that, and it was, like, terrifying.
Oh, dear.
Yeah.
That can be painful to look at.
I know. I mean, in some ways it was kind of charming to be like, oh, look at that. And the other ways, like, God, this can never see the light of day.
But also reminds you how far you've come, too.
True. Yeah. I've always had this dance, I guess, again, to keep using that phrase, between, like, music and art for me. So it's like, I played some instruments, I've had some bands, I do some design work, I print, and I'm always just feel like I'm kind of bouncing between these couple different things or interests, and somehow I guess the past 20 years what I've created is like middle ground between all those things is sort of where I've landed. But yeah, the design, I don't know, I kind of wish I had gone for, you know, a bachelor's degree and done more formal training or classes. Especially like listen to your podcast and look some of the guests on here and other people and, you know, going through Instagram. I'm just like, God, everyone is so much better. Like,
well, everyone is so good. There's so many fantastic designers and everyone approaches it from a different angle, kind of, even if you have an education. I hate asking the influence question, but are there some album designers that you kind of look to, or you try not to rip them off, or who is like a beacon?
Know, as far as the label goes, I've only ever designed maybe two or three releases that I've put out of the maybe 30 or 40 things that have come out so far, because I've tried to be more art director, you know, since I landed in that spot, and because I kind of think everyone else is better than I am. So I'm like, aww. I'd rather just tap into designers that I really like, you know, see what they do. I was really into 20 years ago when I was in school, the art director for 4AD.
Oh, Von Oliver.
Yes, Von Oliver. Uh-huh. Like, I really liked the Von Oliver stuff when I was young. And I've always, and it's not a specific designer, but again, like growing up in sort of punk and hardcore, I always just really like the sort of punk collage cut up photocopy style, which is, you know, a million people. But
yeah, half-tone.
I mean, when I was really young, yeah. And like when I was really young, like all the art for like Crass, the punk band Crass and all that, like I still love all those like collage cut up and Winston Smith for all that Dead Kennedy stuff. And
oh yeah.
But I mean, more contemporary, you know, actually, one of my bands, Somerford Institute, just had a record come out yesterday, our first full length, and Mr. Jeff Kleinsmith designed it for us. And it's honestly like, I love
Jeff designed that.
Yeah. And I love Jeff's work so much. And Jeff awesome. Is just a sweetheart.
He's a recurring guest on the show and friend. Yeah. That is amazing. Let's talk about your new record. Congrats.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, it's Jeff and Sasha were some of the first people that Sub Pop hired us as to print posters for the label. And Jeff has always just been super kind and super generous with his knowledge and just everything. And so when it came to doing this record, you know, he'd offered years ago to do something. I was like, let me make it a worthwhile endeavor for you. And Somerford Institute finally finished our first full length, and I was really happy with it. And we put a lot of time and energy into the recording. And, we, you know, then I sent it to Jeff and was like, hey, can I take you up on that offer finally? And I was really worried too, because I was like, you know, sometimes you cross personal I mean, it's always been a personal professional relationship, but sometimes when you hire someone to do something, it is that fear of like, is this going to be something I like? And he sent in like a handful of different drafts, and I was like, actually, all of these are awesome. I would take any of these. So we narrowed it down to one, and he really knocked it out of the park for what I was looking for. And
that's awesome. I'll have the graphic up in post.
Cool.
But tell us the name of the record and where we can find it.
It's called, the band is Somerford Institute, and the record is called Exit Signal. And you can get it on the SFI Recordings Bandcamp, the vinyl, and then the digital is streaming everywhere. And I should have the packaging done in the next week or two and start shipping those out for pre-orders and get it into some stores.
Order it. The packaging is half the fun, so it's so nice. People have asked, like, what about SFI? Why don't you have him on the show? And I was like, I know, I want to. And I asked a while back, but you were dealing with some health problems. Do you? How are you doing now? Is there like an update?
I'm doing mostly well. There's a few things that we're kind of working on right now with the squeeze of my heart, the ejection fraction. I guess the summary for anyone that doesn't know is that the short version is October of 2022, I went to the doctor for the first time in a very long time, because we have a nice healthcare system where insurance is expensive and I didn't have any. And so I went to like a Zoom care or something, and they found that I had a really crazy heart murmur, and I didn't know anything about that previously. So they really wanted me to get into a cardiologist. That took a few months. I did get in to see a cardiologist. At first, they weren't too worried. And then they had me do a couple tests, and then things kind of shifted quickly. And they were like, hey, your heart is basically, I had a leaky aortic valve. And so I was up to the point where it was like, they said it was a 52% regurgitation. So more than half of the blood that was pumping out of my heart would just roll back into my heart chamber. Mm. It was a weird. And then in tandem with that, I also had an aneurysm on my aortic root. And so it was pretty interesting news to learn when you think you have nothing wrong with you. And so I end up in this like back and forth of going all these appointments and tests and trying to schedule stuff. And we thought we were going to be able to schedule it for last fall. And I would just do some like test to monitor things through the summer. Mm-hmm. And then fast forward to July of last year. And 2 days before my 40th birthday, I took an echocardiogram as a follow-up. And then the day after my birthday, they called and said, hey, we'll see you next week. You will not make for September. And so I had about like 7 or 8 days to get everything in order, shut my business down for the first time since it had been a business, and have open heart surgery at 40. So,
oh my God. So yeah, I am so glad you made it through that. How scary. What?
Yeah. You know, it was weird. Cause it was like, it was definitely scary. And it was like confusing too. And just sort of, you know, the whole thing was a little disorienting, and but also I just had so much going on and so many things I had to attend to that none of it really felt real either. Mm-hmm. And like, I've talked about it with a couple people, but it's like, I also like, I printed 1,000 fish posters the day before I went into surgery. Oh, like, God. You know, I was for all intents and purposes normal and fine, and I felt fine. So it was very bizarre to be like, you know, have all these tests and doctors being like, oh no, we don't know how you're still alive. This is weird. You should be dead. And at the same time, I'm also still working and doing the things I normally do. So it's very like this weird disconnect where I'm like, wait, what are you telling me?
You said you should be dead?
Well, technically, the first surgeon we saw was going over my charts with me and my wife, and he said, look, if she or I woke up with your test results and conditions tomorrow, we would be on life support.
Wow.
Yeah, which is wild. But, you know, also the human body, the way it adapts, I guess, like...
Oh, so just... your heart had gotten used to it or something?
Well, basically my heart had just grown. So my heart is also like 2.4 centimeters bigger than it should be or something. Which is a problem because a heart is a muscle, and as muscle grows, it gets thinner, and then eventually if it gets too big, it'll just pop.
Oh my God.
So part of, not to be too morbid, so part of this whole thing was I had to have the surgery. They fixed the aortic valve. They did a graft and cut out the aneurysm on the aortic root. And then now I'm doing PT and taking a couple drugs to try and reduce the size of my heart, and then strengthen like the squeeze to it. So that's like outside of the squeeze is lower than it should be. Like right now I'm technically in, chronic heart failure, but you know, again, that can all hopefully just, it's a matter of like going to the gym, mm-hmm. doing this PT stuff and just drugs and time. And yeah, that's the weird wild ride. So it's been, the past year's been a bit of a blur, and it's also, you know, made for juggling the label and my print shop and a marriage and personal life bit of a circus these days.
Wow. And you still put out a record.
Yeah, still. Well, yeah, I mean, I guess since or in between all of that, now we would have put out, I think in the past 12 months we put out 10 records or something like that, maybe.
Seven, in addition to your own.
Six or
yeah.
something. Yeah, I mean, you know, it's especially projects that aren't mine, like working with other artists. If I agree to do a record, I feel an obligation and responsibility. And so, like, what does it matter to them what's going on in my personal life? That's not their business. Like, I agreed to do something with them, you know, I got to fulfill that. And it's nice, you know, at the end of the day, to hold the records and see that and be like, aww, you know, this is something I was involved with, and it looks cool and it sounds cool, and it's worth it for that.
What are some of the eligibility, like, requirements of a band wants to work with you, or an artist, like an electronic artist wants to work with you? What do you look for?
I mean, well, currently there aren't, because I'm just not saying yes to anything new. I had so much more stuff lined up last year that is just sitting here that I need to get through. So I'm trying to, I have this tendency to overextend myself, if you can't
me
tell.
Too.
Yeah, and I get excited about things, or I get focused in on one thing, and then that's all I want to do or whatever. And so I have a tendency to be giving, like, you know, 80% of myself to, like, 50 different things, and that doesn't really add up. So I'm trying, in light of the health stuff and all of this, trying to make some efforts to be a little more realistic, find a balance between the label, the print shop, and personal life. And so for the time being, I'm not working with anybody new. But, you know, I don't know if there's any set criteria to any of it. So like I said, I started the label, and originally it was just to put out my own projects. And those first couple records did well enough that, like, I almost broke even on them, and people seemed into it. So I took the chance, and I reached out to a couple artists that I've just always really liked, and offered to reissue some cassettes they had done like a decade ago on vinyl. One of them was Steve Moore.
Oh, yeah.
Of the band Zombie.
Wow,
yeah.
And, awesome.
And then Tony, the Major, who is the drummer of Zombie, so the other half of Zombie. The two of them, I love their work as Zombie, but I've also just always loved their solo work. And they each had these tapes that I've had forever that are, like, from 2010 or 12 or something. And I sort of took the chance and reached out. I knew them a little bit, and said, hey, you know, you want to take a chance with a new label and let me reissue these tapes on vinyl? And they were super cool about everything. And so things kind of progressed from there. And it was like suddenly some people that I, like, didn't know at all but owned records by were reaching out to me, which was wild and blew my mind. And so that's how I ended up working with, like, Future Museums and MCS, who is Michael Sharp, who's also in that project Sun God, and the band Uniform, that sort of noise metal from New York. I don't know what the unifying theme is musically.
Your taste.
But, yeah, I guess. Yeah, and it is very idiosyncratic, so there's no way for me to possibly be like, hey, if you have X, Y, and Z, I'll be into it. But I can't forget to mention that Paul Reidel has been a big part of the catalog. He's in the band Blood Incantation, and he did some great, like, ambient synth stuff that leans more towards the very minimalist side of things, like kind of classic 70s, 80s, new age. I always hesitate to use the word electronic, because I feel like that has a weird connotation to it. But then it's like, it's not just synth music, because I think a lot of people think, like, oh, you have to have synths or whatever for SFI. But also, like, no. I mean, if I just heard a really cool, you know, just guitar, bass, and drums record that was interesting, it doesn't matter to me. I think there is, like, a sort of cosmic through line, I guess, with the music that I've put out.
Or maybe
it's, like, intention and vibe.
Yes, I love that. And also maybe a little cinematic. Like,
yeah, I can definitely see that. I mean, I love soundtracks.
Yeah. Score vibes, like, to some of it.
Yeah, especially, you know, like, so we did the Blutbrauer record, which is Eric Blood and Corey Brewer's, or maybe I shouldn't say it is, because they tried to do it anonymously originally.
Oh, shoot.
But it's their, like, sort of giallo worship, Morricone 70s, you know, 60s fake Italian soundtrack. I love that kind of stuff.
That.
And yeah,
me too. I love Umberto. I mean, like, the fake soundtrack thing is so fun to me.
Yeah, and, you know, I mean, and that was a big thing for me too, is like, I guess jumping around in timelines, it's like, kind of grew up in punk and metal and hardcore, and I moved out here in 2004, and I had a bunch of different bands and played drums in, and a lot of that was like, one was a psych rock band, one was kind of this weird synth and drums, and I played drums, doom whatever duo, I don't know. And then I kind of evolved into getting into synths myself and started playing synth stuff. And with that, it's like, I've always loved Tangerine Dream and Klaus Schulze. And, I, you know, as an avid music collector and nerd, I've just sort of like, you start going down the rabbit hole, and I've spent, you know, 15, 20 years now, like, buying more and more obscure synth and German krautrock. And it's like, so I think my interest for the label all extend from that too, where it's like, that's the stuff I love. And I, you know, none of, again, like, none of that, it's like, I guess technically it's electronic, but also you're not, you know, no one's generally referencing like, oh yeah, Schulze and Tangerine Dream are these electronic artists. No, like, it's, yes, yeah, it's more by nature.
Yeah.
Yeah, to me, that's what I think. Yeah. Oh, the the special edition of our first record.
Yeah, I bought that at Wall of Sound. Shout out to Wall of Sound.
Oh, and, awesome.
I love that.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, everyone loves the foil these days.
I love the foil. That's what it is, Dad. So I wanted to show, is there anything that you could comment on the art direction of any of these? The Meat for Wolfman?
You know, so this one actually, I kind of had nothing to do with.
I love
Corey and Eric. Yeah, I mean, so that's Eric Adrian Lee did the artwork, and he's phenomenal. He also did the art for the Old Dark House record, which is myself and Corey. And Eric Blood and Corey had originally put up that record just as a digital thing on Bandcamp, and they hired Eric Adrian Lee to do the artwork at that point. And I stepped in and did a cassette version originally, and then the vinyl. And so we took Eric's art and just had him do full packaging for that.
So cool. But that I was all. It.
I'm not quite sure what. I think that one, because it's supposed to be a fake soundtrack to an unmade Andy Warhol movie, was riffing on the other Andy Warhol movies.
So what's the artist's name again? They really captured that vibe here.
Eric Adrian Lee.
Eric Adrian Lee.
He's a really, I mean, amazing designer from Portland.
Wow.
And he's super prolific. It's crazy how much stuff he does.
And I love the font choices and everything. Like, it just works really well. And then, yeah, and it's mysterious. It makes me want to hear it. And then you mentioned Steve Moore. I really love this. And again, it feels so good in your hands. It's screen printed, so it feels like, you know, a piece of artwork. This is fabulous. Yeah. What was the inspiration and...
So that's Telepath Graphics out of Austin. Yeah, he's really cool. I kind of stayed out of it a little bit and just put him and Steve together and said, hey, you guys can work out the ideas on it. But I know that a big part of it was like 70s and 80s library records. So like the KPM and like all those, I think some of the Color Sound library, and just wanted that sort of classic library record look.
I love that look.
Yeah. And then, yeah, you know, that's the thing with the screen printing. It's like, I just, to myself too, I'm like, I just love the tactile nature of it, and that you can like pull it out of the sleeve and it clearly looks and feels different than just a regular jacket.
And it gives you something to do while you're listening. You're also looking at everything. You're reading, you're... I don't know. It's a whole experience for me.
I mean, there's nothing better than like getting a new record or finding an old record. I mean, one of my favorite things ever is finding used records that you then like go through, and someone's put out like, you know, old like newspaper clippings, or there's like photocopy insert, like either intentional stuff or stuff from the person who owned it over the years, who is like obviously very into it, and you know, like sometimes they've written their name on the inside of the cover, or you find newspaper clippings or like a photo or something. I just love, like, it's just, it is a, like you said, the experience, you know. I love getting a record and just having all the pieces and things to look at and take apart, and It puts you, it creates the world of like what the record is, you know?
It does. I know. And I love when usually like when you find a used record, the poster still isn't in it, but every now and then you get everything or the iron on or whatever. You're like, damn.
I wish that is stuff I wish I did. I want to do more of with the labels, like, but
what happened to iron-ons?
Print everything. Yeah, iron-ons or like just the, you know, random photocopy flyer thing that's, you know, little zines, stuff like that. Like those are, that's the best stuff.
The little zine. I love a bonus zine. It's my favorite. What's the deal?
Well, from the get-go, I decided to do Obi strips because I think that, you know, a lot of these projects are unknown projects or new projects. And when you're in a record store and you're flipping through and there are just hundreds of thousands of records everywhere, Obi strip is a perfect way that you can put a little blurb about the record, put information, and then you can also put stuff about the label on the backside of it. And artistically, it opened up the option that when I work with people, I tell them there's no restraint on how they design the record or what they do for the design. So you don't even have to put the name of the band on the cover if you don't want to. Like the new record that Jeff just did for Soma Free Institute, there's no text on the cover.
I love that.
And it doesn't matter. Yeah, I'm just like, I don't want to impede on the art, you know? And having the Obi strip, I guess, deals with the retail side of it or the promotional side. And then it lets the art be the art. If someone doesn't want words, then that's fine. But yeah, that so that New Frontiers record is also Telepath Graphics, and that was my like new age project with Justin, who's also in Soma Free Institute. And we really just wanted like I think we did a couple drafts and then landed on that, and I had him just flesh that out, and I just wanted that like very 80s minimalist new age look. Simple. I think that's a three color cover, and Gabe who does Telepath Graphics does an awesome job of like two or three colors and keeps it simple, but it's super effective.
That's a great design. And it also, like you said, it matches the sound. Hey, is there anything coming out or anything new that you want to tell the audience about?
So yeah, some of the newer stuff we got is the MCS record, which came out in the fall, which is Mike Sharp, who's also in Uniform and Sun God, and I think like a million other projects, he's a million things. We still actually have Special Edition, which is surprising. This layout was actually done by Justin Klein that's also in Soma Free Institute. Mike just came to us with the finished record and then the painting by Connor O'Leary, who's a friend of his, and just gave it to Justin and said, do something with this, however you want to make it look. And I think Justin ended up with like a cool kind of 70s, but kind of modern looking, real simple, but graphic layout for the whole thing. And this ended up being like, what was this? A six color, I think, CMYK print for the painting part of it. And then I had to do the spot colors for the background. And then all of our special editions have these extra slip cases that only come on that. And then this guy was like a pink and white swirl smoke, which is always fun.
I love it.
Yeah, it's a really cool, and you know, we were talking, I think, before about how what's the theme or what's the unifying thing about the label, and it's like, this record is musically one of those ones that's pretty different than a lot of the other stuff, but I think it fits in perfectly of being kind of a, you know, the vibe that he was still going for. It's like a little more of psych rocky, but it's still that same whatever realm of all the other stuff. Which I mean, I really love it. It's one of those records you can just kind of put on and leave it on in the background and just keep flipping it over, and it never gets old.
Nice. I love that. It sounds incredible. And so you, going back to the cover really quick, this was a combination of CMYK and screen printing?
It's all screen printing. Yeah. So I've worked out a pretty good CMYK screen printing system.
Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, I mean, it's basically just, you know, doing, so like offset printing is CMYK, and they use the four plates, and the only real difference is you can do basically the same thing with screen printing, but and you have to use process inks, but the only difference is you can't get a halftone dot that's as small as offset printing, so you do see it, but it kind of gives it more of that, like, I mean, for one, it still lets you know that, like, this is handmade. Seeing those dots, and two, I think it kind of adds an extra texture that's nice, especially for a lot of these layouts, like, you know, because the real front cover painting is like, it's an oil painting that he did, and they just took a photo of it, and so the only real way for me to screen print it was to, without making it like a million spot colors, was to do CMYK, and I like it in the end because the texture of the halftone dot next to the dots that are in the frame around it, you know, the larger dots, they just add like a balance and kind of just an extra texture in there.
On the screen, I couldn't tell at all, but yeah, and holding it in my hand, I can see.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very cool.
Yeah. I mean, that is the tricky part of this is, you know, because I committed to the screen printed, layouts, it's like, I don't think until you have a record or a tape that we released in your hands, like, you just see the digital version and everything looks the same on a computer. I know that another one that's more recent is this Delta IV record we did.
Yes.
And like, so the slipcase for this is on that rainbow foil that everyone loves.
Love it.
And that's, you know, and so, so Chris Jordan did the artwork for this.
Okay.
Who, he's the bass player for Sunny Day Real Estate and Spirit Award. And he's a buddy of mine, and he had worked with the drummer of Delta IV's other band and did their record, so we thought we'd use him for this. And like, I think this is a perfect example of like, you have to have this record in person, because I used two fluorescent colors for the pink and the orange on this that really like pop in person for the jacket. And then, like I said, that slipcase for the special edition is on that rainbow foil, which is, there's no way to make a JPEG mock-up that looks anywhere correct.
No, you have to order these, folks. Like, you have to hold them in your hands. It's really cool. It's artwork.
Yeah, and you know, and that's the thing to me again is like, I think we talked about before, is that it's the whole package is the deal. It's, you know, you can't, it's one thing to like spend all the time and the energy on making the music and making the record sound good, but like, make it look good, make it something that will catch people. Like, people don't hear your record when they're in a record store looking through bins. They see it and make it something, you know, will pop out at them.
It feels more like special, like collector's items too. The fact that they're so, you know, there's so much work put into them and care.
So. Yeah. And I hope, you know, and I do hope that that comes across, because it's like, like I said, it's, you know, that's part of the reason I try not to do the designs, because I print everything. I do all the pre-press. I do, like, I literally have to go get them die cut and then hand assemble each cover myself. So it's like, which is why I'm kind of behind when I schedule stuff for release, because it's just, tend to underestimate how much time it's going to take me. And I'm like, you know, you sit on 500 records and you have to hand make each cover. It's a lot of work. But at the end, I'm like, you know, I think that I've definitely gotten enough response from people that I think people that see the records and like them get it, and they understand, like, yeah, this is more than just like some production run, like mass marketing item. You know, it's like, this is, I care for the whole thing. And, you know, again, the artist put all this effort and energy into the records, into the music, like, let's do the full package. Let's give the whole thing. And yeah. And there's so many records out there. There's just like, it's an endless sea. And like, how do you differentiate? How do you show people that are on the buying end of it? Like, hey, this is worth giving us your $30 or $25 or whatever. Is like, everyone's got a record, and you know, which is great, but how do you get anyone to pay attention? You know? And
I know. And they're all expensive, but they're not like, I don't know. There's a lot of reissues that are priced so crazy, and to me, this kind of thing is worth it. It's worth having this in your hands.
Yeah, and you know, it's like, again, the end of it, I'm just like, I want these things. I want them this way. Yeah. So like, I just want a copy of it that's like that. I'm like, all right, I guess other people can have it too. But and I guess the only other kind of more recent thing was this Jake Schrock record that also came out around the same time. And yeah, I mean, Jake, God, his Tropical Depression record has just been a constant for me since it came out, like, God, maybe 8 years ago or something. And as soon as I started this label, I was like, I'm going to put out a record by this guy. And I hounded him for a couple of years. And the artwork for this, he actually handled with his partner. And to me, it perfectly captures. He has this weird, like, perfect blend of, like, melancholy but upbeat vintage 80s synths. It's a very weird blend where it's like, it all kind of sounds like a bummer, but it also sounds sort of upbeat and happy. And I'm like, I don't know how you do those two things at the same time. Someone I think described it as like a neon lit beach at night or something.
Ooh, which I think that
is totally captures it. It's like, yeah, it'd be like Miami in 1989, but at night, with just like the glow of a neon sign from a strip behind you or something.
Whoa, I love that description.
Like, so the slipcase for the special edition is like the clips for circuit boards for the inside of synths.
Okay, I was wondering what those were. That's awesome.
I believe that's what they are, which, you know, kind of ties into like, and then, yeah, this is like a circuit board with the chips on it and the connectors. And I think he did a video for one of these. It's like a 3D diagram of an exploded dissection of a synth.
Oh, my God.
Anatomy. So it all ties together well. But, you know, and it's got that simple, like, this looks like this could have just been something from the 80s with just that real, the sharp, almost neon green and simple pattern.
And the vinyl, the record itself is clear, like turquoise with some black speckle. Mine is. Yeah. I love it.
Yeah. I mean, those are kind of the more recent things that are out and shipping. And then I have that Hovercraft record is finally shipping this coming week. And then that Soma Free that Jeff did the design. I'm going to start printing next week. Yes. It just ended up being a lot of colors for both the slipcase and the record. So I had to spend a little extra time dissecting that and getting it going. So.
Well done. All of this is so nice. And I think people should definitely go over to the Bandcamp, check it out, order it.
But yep, those are going out and then there'll be new stuff. There's a record from another Seattle duo called Pale Endless that's on pre-order right now. And that's going to come out in May.
It's the red and black design. That looks so cool.
Yeah. They used to be this band Noisetron that's been around for like a decade or so. And decided to change their name with the sound change on this record, and that's kind of the next project I'm focusing on. So, but there's all sorts of stuff in the horizon for the future, so just can't really talk about any of it yet.
Okay, well, stay posted, and it'll be something to look forward to hearing about what's coming up. I guess, what is the first album cover that you remember, like, that stuck with you, something that sort of mesmerized you? Was it something new age from the 80s? Do you remember it?
I mean, I definitely distinctly remember, the first two tapes I ever bought was a David Bowie tape and an AC/DC tape. I don't even know how old I was, but I remember going to Strawberry Records and somewhere in southern New Hampshire and getting them. You know, again, like, I did, if I really dig back, like, Dead Kennedys and Crass Records when I was preteen or teen, early teen, like, definitely sticking. Like, I remember I bought a art book of Winston Smith's art, of all of his collages that he used for the Dead Kennedys when I was a teenager, and I really loved that. So I guess, you know, probably that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and that stuff was so representative of the vibe, and also is you cannot separate the music from the visuals.
Oh, 100%.
In my mind, I can't. It's like they're linked.
Yeah. I mean, and that's the, you know, I guess it like, going back to kind of earlier is like, that's the thing is like, if you can land on an effective, like, symbiotic relationship between the visuals and the music for a record or a band and carry that through, it just creates the whole thing. It's the whole ethos or environment or like, you know, world that is that music. And I think it's like, you know, there are just certain bands that you can talk about now and you're like, oh, well, you can't separate those two. Like, you don't have Joy Division without Peter Seville. Is that his?
Peter Seville.
Yeah. You don't have like Joy Division without Peter Seville. You don't have Dead Kennedys without Winston Smith. You don't have Crass without, was it G. Voucher, I think, did a lot of the collages. It's all.
I still need to dig into a Crass episode. I haven't yet.
I mean, you know, it's a very specific thing, but if you look at it, like what they did as a band visually and musically, and, you know, truth be told, like, I still love those records. They're maybe not actually good musically, but it's like there's a world of music that exists only because they started doing that. You know, or even like Raymond Pettibone and Black Flag. Those are two, like, inseparable things.
And his,
and that's the kind of,
and Raymond Pettibone and Sonic Youth and him and a lot, like, he was a weird anomaly that he was able to become the identity for several different things.
And that's, you know, and that's the wild thing too, because you wouldn't, if you were on paper to be like, okay, the music of Black Flag and then this guy's sort of weird black and white ink drawings, you wouldn't necessarily think that those would be like your first go-to. But then you see all of it together and you see it and it's like, oh, that's what that is. That makes like, or all the stuff he did with Sonic Youth is like, does this make sense on paper? I don't think so. But he like what he did totally nails what they sounded like and what they were doing.
And some of the most parodied design work of all time as well.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah, that's the ultimate, I think, compliment is if anyone ever parodied my work, I would be like, okay,
I've accomplished
everything I can. Again, thank you. And what, okay, so what do you want people to know? Is there anything you want people to know about either Broken Press, SFI, Soma Free Institute, all these wonderful projects?
You know, it's like I touched on Broken Press a little bit, which is my day job slash backbone for all this stuff, which is a screen printing shop in Wallingford. And we mostly do posters and show posters, which is how I know Jeff and Sasha and so many of these designers. And I occasionally design some stuff and print it under that name. I started doing more show posters again, which I had not done in a very long time, which has been interesting to dive back into. But, and then, yeah, the label, you know, there's probably, you know, about 8 or 10 things lined up in the next year or so. So there will be two new records from Steve Moore. That'll be brand new material. A full length from Mnemonic Pulse, who's out of Portland, who we did a tape for. There's a new Blue Brower that will be coming out later this year.
Is that really a secret who it is?
No. I mean, it was,
that's awesome.
They were pretty successful with it. The first like 6 months or so of that band, there were definitely a few people like we saw. Someone put one of those cassettes on eBay for like $100 or $200 when they sold out. That's like funny. Based on the premise of it being the Warhol thing, which I feel kind of bad about. But
I think that's great. I love design pranks. Yeah. We need them.
I know. there's, you know, like I said, there. So the new Soma Free Institute record just came out yesterday, which I'm really happy with. Yay. We kind of started writing that stuff like 5 or 6 years ago now. Poked at recording it. I did all the record all the synth stuff here in my practice space in Ballard. And then we went down and worked with Tim Green from Nation of Ulysses and the Fucking Champs down in his studio in Northern California and did drums and finished that. And he did an amazing job mixing and mastering it. And yeah, and then Jeff Kleinsmith did the artwork for it that I love.
Amazing.
So
just an all-star
pretty happy about that
effort.
Yeah. and
a constellation of great talent. That's awesome.
Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, and that's the fun part of all of it for me, is just like working with all these people that I know that maybe don't know each other, or people that I don't know whose work I appreciate and like, and having the opportunity to reach out to them and start a relationship.
Absolutely.
It's, you know, it's just so fun to pull these pieces together and see what you end up with. Because I think that a lot of these like visual artists I know and the musicians I'm working with maybe don't know about each other or wouldn't have had and you know, and it's just fun to like put that all together and see what we end up with. And, you know, it's all just a passion project, I guess. So no one's getting rich off any of this, and might as well make it fun.
Well, what a cool legacy. What a great passion project to have. And you have a website?
Yeah. Yeah, there's the Bandcamp page that's, I think, just SFI Recordings, okay. Bandcamp.com, and then SFI_Records at is our Instagram.
Cool.
And then Broken Press Design is my Instagram for the print shop, and yeah.
Very cool.
Not the best with updating, but I try to, wow. So.
Very cool. Well, again, really appreciate it, and much success. And I'm glad you're doing. It sounds better alive. And...
Oh, thank you. Yeah, it is. So far, we're good this year, and good. I'm happy with that. So.
That's awesome. Yeah. Well, take care. Shout out to Danielle.
Cool.
All right.
Thank you again so much. Yeah. I really appreciate it.
Nice to talk to you. Bye.
Yeah. Bye.
Cute. Oh.
Oh, and we said we're done.